It's time to go out and don't bother me. From a very chilly nightclub at the end of the world, where it's now minus 3 degrees outside, this is Michael Rupert, Tracker of Truth, coming back to you on the Lifeboat Hour today, Sunday, January the 13th, 2001. How's the weather where you are? The theme of tonight's show is my conclusion. We're going to define this and look at it in depth. Is that the only thing sustaining everything that's functioning in terms of society now is the meme? In other words, people's belief that that's the way it's supposed to work. Because objectively, there's just too much unambiguous information that the world is truly turning inside out at a heartbreaking pace. So what is a meme? What is a meme? This is from Wikipedia, and this is one they did a really good job on, I think. A meme is an idea, behavior, or style that spreads from person to person within a culture. A meme acts as a unit for carrying cultural ideals, symbols, or practices which can be transmitted from one mind to another through writing, speech, gestures, rituals, or other imitable phenomena, i.e. television, advertising, mainstream news, blah, blah, blah. Supporters of the concept regard memes as cultural analogs to genes in that they self-replicate, mutate, and respond to selective pressures. The word meme is a shortening modeled on gene of mimimi from ancient Greece, or mimima, meaning something imitated, to imitate. And it was coined by the British evolutionary biologist Richard Dawkins in a book called The Selfish Gene in 1976. And as a concept for discussing evolutionary principles and explaining the spread of ideas and cultural phenomena. Examples of memes given in the book include melodies, catchphrases, fashion, and the technology of building arches. They also include things like infinite consumption, denial, selfishness, self-centeredness, dissociation from it, etc. Proponents theorize that memes may evolve by natural selection in a manner analogous to that of biological evolution. Memes do this through the processes of variation, mutation, competition, and inheritance, each of which influence a meme's reproductive success. Here's the cool part at the end. Memes spread through the behaviors that they generate in their hosts. Memes that propagate less prolifically may become extinct, while others may survive, spread, and, for better or for worse, pay close attention, mutate. Memes that replicate most effectively enjoy more success, and some may replicate effectively even when they prove to be detrimental to the welfare of their hosts. The meme's the only thing holding everything together. Let's start with some examples, because we have a meme about weather and how it behaves in certain part of the world. And we've been trying to behave and build our thinking around something that clearly isn't true. Let's just take a look. It was 122 degrees Fahrenheit in New South Wales, Australia this week. That's hot. They have added a new color temperature on the temperature maps for Australia to reflect 50 degrees centigrade or higher temperatures. 50 degrees centigrade is 125 Fahrenheit. And it's amazingly out of control. From Britain's The Guardian 2 days ago, as Australia heat wave hits new high, warning that brush fires will continue. Australia's heat wave set a new high of almost 50 degrees centigrade as authorities warned that large uncontrolled bushfires would continue to threaten areas in the southeast of the country. It's particularly bad around Canberra in the central southern part. Meanwhile, in remote Moomba, a gas exploration and processing town in the outback of South Australia, the temperature hit 49.6 degrees by mid-afternoon, making it the hottest of the two-week spell, and 48.6 in the town of Bourke, 500 miles northwest of Sydney. Okay, so that's Australia. It was in the high 30s Fahrenheit overnight last night in Los Angeles. A little frosty in Hollywood, 38 degrees in Hollywood. Very unusual. From NBC News, a chill has left California frozen in its tracks, stranding motorists on snowy roadways and keeping everyone close to the warmth of their heaters. A low-pressure trough descending over San Diego County and parts of neighboring Orange County could keep nightly temperatures below the freezing point in coastal areas, unheard of in San Diego County. The low deserts and inland valleys threatening orange avocado orchards and other sensitive plants, forecasters warned, reported the Associated Press Friday and Saturday nights were to be, Friday and Saturday nights, expected to be the coldest night. Well, here's from the Daily Bhaskar in India. 23 more people die from cold wave in north. Death toll reaches 155 in UP, and I'm assuming that's upper Punjab. New Delhi, the entire North India continued to remain in the grip of a severe cold wave on Sunday, with 23 more people succumbing to the chill. 70 people froze to death in Bangladesh 3 days ago. And on the east coast of the U.S., it's 30 degrees above normal. Now, here's a really mind blower for you. 11 dead as the Mideast is battered by hail, snow, and rain. There was heavy snow, heavy enough to shovel, snowfall in Damascus, Syria. Refugee camps, people are freezing. It doesn't snow in the Mediterranean coast. Serious snowfall in Damascus. That was 80 people froze to death, not 70 in Bangladesh. And I got to thank Robin Westenra, my Facebook friend, for being very diligent in posting a lot of these anomalies. But it was 52 in New York City today. Now, overnight here in the San Luis Valley of Colorado, where I live not far from Crestone, and the beautiful Mount Blanca and the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, it was minus 22 last night. But that's 22 below zero Fahrenheit. That's cold. But I got to tell you, out of all of the weather situations that I just read to you, where I live is the only place where it was quote-unquote normal or playing according to the meme. Now, obviously, there's a lot of symbolism in that. And, you know, hey, how's your life? Oh, nothing unusual. How was your day? How do you not miss what's going on? And I've been amazed at some of the blathering, blithering discussions that I've seen come. Quit calling it climate collapse. It's not this. It's a climate. What everybody just needs to understand is the weather's going berserk, and it's not getting any better. The deviations are changing. I wish I had... remember the name, but there was a great video we put up. It might have been Guy McPherson. I don't think so, but it was one on explaining climate change, whatever you call it, these dramatic alterations in normal weather patterns. The weather meme explains that as all of these mutually self-reinforcing cycles that Guy McPherson talks about are playing, it creates a much greater instability in the jet stream in the upper atmosphere. And the jet stream will either compress and rise way up higher, taking warm air higher, or sink way low in spots, taking cold air much lower. But it is dramatic instability. And Guy McPherson's got new stuff up that we have had on the Facebook, on my Facebook page this week. And all of these climate changes, from the methane release to all of the gas emissions, they're all now mutually positively reinforcing feedback cycles, which indicates tipping point, tipping point, tipping point, tipping point, tipping point. But now we contrast that with let's juxtapose it, put it side by side. With a theme that's been pretty constant here, is the rising power of the feminine on the planet as the ages do shift. And I commented last week that that there was backlash in the form of very, very serious crimes against women. Well, we have more sad news on that tonight. But we also have more news, encouraging news, of female energy and female leadership effectively asserting itself, and I have had great praise, and I still do, for the Canadian movement Idle No More, and I'm just amazed at how corporate mainstream media is shunning that completely. I mean, they do not want to talk about that. They can't see it. And, of course, that's the way it is with any kind of truth that they can't kill or compromise. But Idle No More is very, very effective. And I'm not going to be, I've been around movements too long. You were all with me when I was deeply involved in the Occupy movement. And definitely I put my butt on the line there. But I've been doing that for 30 years. And this is not to put down the Idle No More movement in Canada, which is a dramatic response to the passage of Bill C-45 by the fascist Harper government in Canada that just abrogated all of the Native Americans, almost all of their rights to the waters, the rivers, the land. And it was just a complete abrogation. It was a total bitch slap, that's what it was. Not only to indigenous peoples in Canada and all throughout this great turtle island we live on in North America, but to Mother Earth as well. And these women said, "We've had enough." Chief Teresa Spence went on a hunger strike, and it was. So I've been talking about that. Well, they're still making progress. Now, if I am not in a total rah-rah, you got to go out and support them. It has nothing to do with the strength or quality of the movement, and the very significant fact that it is matrilineal, female-inspired, led movement, which, hoorah! But it has to do with the circumstances of the world. We had time in earlier movements, even with Occupy, we thought, to figure out a list of demands. We had time to try to... But the circumstances have gotten so bad that any movement that arises now has got a much higher wall to climb. And I wish Idle No More the best, but I report on them tonight, sending cheer and prayers and great support. But I report on them tonight, watching just optimistically at and still perceiving what is the most important part of it for me, which is the rising power of the woman that male-dominated society doesn't seem to want to deal with. We're going to close a few circles on that. But a spokesman for Idle No More issued a statement. Prime Minister Harper was going to meet with the Native chiefs, and the chiefs decided not to, and I think that was a wise decision. But here's a statement that came out today. "It's important to understand why our chiefs did not attend the meeting with Harper. Our treaty relationship is with the representative's crown. Every time government officials have tried to deal with us, the honor of the crown was not maintained. Government officials ignore the treaties and have always tried to cheat us out of our land." Chief Spence asked, "When did the Crown give the Prime Minister the authority to override the treaties?" "From working on our land claims, I have learned that our peoples have much to be proud of. Our history is at the center of these outstanding disputes First Nations have with the Crown. Our Anishinaabek, leaders agreed to a nation-to-nation relationship with the British Crown in 1764 in the Treaty of Niagara, which also involved dozens of First Nations. I always like to think of that treaty recorded on the 1764 Wampum Belt and the 24 Nations Belt as the mother of all treaties. At that gathering, Sir William Johnson, representing the Crown, shared copies with our chiefs of the Royal Proclamation of 1763. That proclamation was the King's decree over British subjects that recognized First Nations possession of their lands, and that only the Crown could acquire those lands with the consent of First Nations people through the gatherings convened for that purpose. Wiquemecong can be proud that it has never knowingly surrendered its interest, and in fact, understood that we were reaffirming that interest over the islands and fisheries in Lake Huron by the 1836 treaty with Sir Francis Bond Head, who represented the Crown. It could not have possibly been a surrender, as government officials tried to say, as the agreement was done during the annual distribution of presents, which was the annual reaffirmation of the Niagara wampum and the Crown promise to protect our lands." I lost my place there. I scrolled. "To protect our lands. With the consent of First Nation peoples for that purpose, the government..." This is embarrassing. Okay, "Bondhead may have underestimated our chiefs who understood that British law required that any legal surrender required a gathering for that purpose. Our chiefs did not speak English, so could only understand Bond Head's reference to the Niagara Treaty as a reaffirmation of their ownership of their territory. Island chiefs always stood by this understanding until 1862, when government officials in Upper Canada sowed misinformation and used threats, coercion, and alcohol to divide the chiefs, although it appears that the people across the island were opposed to any surrender. This has been documented repeatedly by our people through petitions submitted to the Crown. We have to find a way to stand together in the spirit of our ancestors and protect these lands and resources the Creator intended to sustain us. As chiefs said in the past, why would we give that up? Even in Canadian law, the Supreme Court has said that the Indian understanding of treaties must be favored over the written text, as our people did not read or write English. Canadians do not understand that for our peoples, the treaties are not one-shot land transactions, but affirmations of an ongoing nation-to-nation relationship. They don't seem to realize that we were never conquered. Canada was built on the peaceful relations established with the original peoples of the land who agreed to share the land and its bounty, as long as our right to derive a livelihood from the land was respected. This understanding has been ignored for too long, and the people are now standing up. And there is a word, Miigwech, which I'm assuming that means these are my words. That was a statement about recent developments with Idle No More by Roland Pangowish. And I just felt I needed to read that. It does really tell me, for all the decades that I have been studying politics, geopolitics, and how the system works or doesn't, that Idle No More is much more effective and much more frightening to the powers that were than is being acknowledged. And for that reason, I will continue to watch it closely, and I encourage you to support it. Again, this is a movement led by women and inspired by women, and I see it doing things. Aho. To set against that, we talked about the horrendous crime, the gang rape and murder that took place in India. Well, there has been another one. This is from the BBC yesterday. Police in India have arrested six men after they allegedly gang raped a woman on a bus just weeks after a similar accident shocked the nation. The latest assault is said to have taken place in the northern state of Punjab. The police are searching for a seventh suspected attacker. Last month, a 23-year-old student died of her injuries after being raped in the capital, Delhi. There are many other sad instances of these crimes against women, and they're not all in India. As a matter of fact, some are in Britain. And so I do. This is the sickest part of the male patriarchal age, which is dying now, and it knows it's dying. It's acting out. Of course, there is no justification for this, but we must expect that, because as we are seeing, and we have to expect to see more of this as collapse proceeds, we will see more and more crimes against women and children. As a matter of fact, in Britain, this is a story from The Guardian, I believe, domestic violence is the single greatest cause of harm, says top Met police officer in London. Chief Superintendent John Sutherland says violence begets violence, raises alarm for children growing up in violent homes. Now, that was from BBC. Also from BBC, Bernardo's concern over child sex trafficking rise. The UK has seen an alarming 22% year-on-year rise in children being sexually exploited, the charity Bernardo says. Bernardo said that a quarter of the 1,452 victims it had recorded had been trafficked for sex within the country. Chief Executive Anne-Marie Carrie said there is an alarming rise in the number of children being moved around the country by abusers. And in Saudi Arabia, they just beheaded a Sri Lankan maid's head for allegedly causing the death of an infant in her care. Unknown how the child died, however, the maid said the child gagged while drinking milk, and the Saudi said, oh, no, she strangled the infant. I doubt that. So they cut her head off. Now, the meme is failing everywhere. We have a lot of examples about that. But what is so clear to me from my perspective as I've been watching this is that there is nothing keeping that world out there running anymore. The corruption, the climate change, the ecological devastation, energy shortages, all of that. It's broken, and there's really nothing visible. So some time ago, I mean, I have, it's no secret to you who've been listening to me for a while, I got so deadly tired of reading the news stories every day. And it wasn't just so much because of the bad news, it's because it was like they had passed a diminishing marginal point of returns. You could read more and more stories, and you were getting less and less connection to reality out of them. And most of the news stories that I see out there today are, you know, I yawn and I go, this thing was dead a long time ago. All they're doing is writing stories, and people are walking around in the meme. They're reinforcing, they're trying to pass it like a disease, and the meme has clearly outlived its usefulness to the host, the meme being infinite growth, you know, male-dominated, corrupt economic, rape the planet, consume, consume, consume. That meme is clearly now a harmful parasite. And there's going to be more stories coming up tonight, though, because I just had to walk away. I couldn't read the stories anymore because they weren't telling me anything that we didn't already know. And that was the turning point that so many of us reached this spring, when so many tipping points were crossed, economically and otherwise. But within that, there are several very significant stories that have come up in the last in the last few days that really now begin to tell me that the meme itself is starting to die. Some of these things we do need to pay attention of and be aware of because changes are underway and we have choices. Which brings me in this nightclub at the end of the world to our very it's a two-song night. Not a three-dog night, but a two-song night. And the first song tonight is a new white trash song that is 3 years old, but it is more important now than ever as the gun control and the shootings and the carnage and the flu and the weather and all of that is raging out there. It's a song from New White Trash called It Would Be Strange.
Yeah.
That was Michael Yost playing the incredible wah-wah guitar on the new White Trash song with Doug Lewis. That's the band I was in, called It Would Be Strange. You can find that song and 36 other originals on the website newwhitetrash.com, all one word. The songwriting here in the San Luis Valley is just continuing at a frenetic, frantic, wonderful, explosive, uber-productive place. We have now 19 songs, hopefully we'll get let you get to hear one of them soon. But these are amazing. This is an amazing body of work that has appeared since November 22nd. I guess there is something to be said for being locked up in a house when it's below zero outside. Good stuff comes out of it, and certainly Doug Lewis has just been inspiring. So has Kristen Weygaard, and I've had a hand in some really fun songs. And we're progressing nicely with that, and I'll keep you posted. I'm eager to play something for you. But let's go back to this meme stuff now. Now, some stories are important, and I tried to prioritize the issues that made me most concerned. And going back to my book, Crossing the Rubicon, which came out in September of 2004, that's over almost eight and a half years ago now, I wrote clearly that one of the areas that the world was going to see as a critical flashpoint at the end of the age of oil, as peak oil hit, as collapse hit, as all of these things hit, was an area of the South China Sea. Now, it depends upon whether you're Chinese or Japanese, what you name these islands. I focused on a chain called the Spratlys, which is all in this same region. It's been hotly contested, and I've been pointing to it and writing about it endlessly for the last 9 years. And it's very important. And to recap the histories, roughly since 2007, 2008, the territorial disputes over very small pockets of oil and natural gas on some of these islands, which are like a boulder sticking up out of the ocean, have intensified. These islands also sit astride one of the most important oil shipping routes, where all the tankers, 60% of the oil on the planet, carrying all the oil to Asia, pass through. One is the Straits of Malacca near Singapore and Thailand, Malaysia, through there. The other is the South China Sea, through which all the tankers pass, carrying oil to Japan, China, and Korea. Well, it's gotten hot. Now, Japan has been mortally wounded, as I have said, since Fukushima. It's a long, slow, ugly death, but there's no doubt about how it's going to play out. And I also wrote in an essay, I believe it was As the World Burns, maybe back in 2004 or 2003, when I said that Japan would inevitably fall into the Chinese sphere of influence. Why? Because of geography. Because energy could not hold Japan to the United States. The continent of North America was bound together by the energy it took to make railroads and then the interstate highway system, airports, etc. As the energy goes away, the bonds go away, and geography rules in collapse, and I said that. But 2 days ago, Chinese and Japanese Air Force planes scrambled and intercept each other. They didn't shoot down. Intercept just means intercept. It don't mean shoot down. Military planes were scrambled. And here's a quote from Business Insider yesterday. The headline on the story said, China newspaper says to prepare for the worst after military confrontation with Japan in the East China Sea. Quote, the Chinese plane scattered soon after, but this marked the first time China and Japan flung military assets at one another over the East China Sea island dispute. A line was crossed, and staying behind it in the future will only be more difficult. Close quote. That's big. And the reason why it's big is because the United States has an absolute ironclad agreement that an attack on Japan is an attack on the United States. We go to war with China immediately. But that's where we are also in the Middle East. We're going to pick up on some of these themes, because I do think they're going somewhere, after we do a station break here. So this is Mike Rupert, Tracker of Truth, on the Lifeboat Hour at PRN.FM. We will be back with you right after these messages. Let's have Tammy Gosmell take us out and bring us back. I just love it when Tammy Gosnell goes apeshit on the guitar. You know, she does that beautiful, angry, powerful stuff. Tammy Gosnell's been a guest on this show. You can find her music. Just Google TammiGosnell. Miss her, and I used her because she's going to be a setup for the second song that I'm going to play here in a little bit. If you want to call in tonight, I want to hear from you. I want to hear what's on your mind. Are you aware of this? I mean, it is so obvious that as the meme breaks down, as the cognitive dissonance increases, who's paying for it? The children and the women, the weak. This, we have to expect a lot of this, and we have to see that this is going to happen. It doesn't mean that's where the world's going. I view this very much as the last depraved outward manifestations of this male-dominant paradigm, this paradigm that is separated from Mother Earth. And as sad as they are, I do take them as signs of because this can't last forever. Idle No More is not a one-time phenomenon, and it's not a Canadian. It's a beautiful phenomenon, but it is a powerful statement. And speaking as a male warrior, and I know that there are a great many men out here who would gratefully and gladly use our bodies to hold space as women rise up, and I encourage that to keep happening. Mother Earth certainly likes that too. But there have been other serious developments that compel me now at this point to say, okay, we're at, I think, a pretty critical point here before we pass through another very serious downward stage in collapse. We all remember, if we choose to think about them, the massive riots that swept Europe in 2009 and 2010, especially in Great Britain. This is from the 13th of January, that's today, in Great Britain. I believe it was The Guardian. Union leader warns of civil unrest in face of austerity program. A union leader has called for a campaign of civil disobedience in protest of the government's austerity measures. Unites Len McCluskey pledged to fight all the way to the next election. As he said, no form of protest, including the prospect of a general strike, should be ruled out. He said the government's policies designed to balance the nation's books were leaving working people feeling battered. I might have used a different word that starts with a B. A number to call tonight is 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. Let me know how you're reading this. But now, let's go back now. And this is the point of where complex civilizations fail spectacularly and fast. Picture rioting of, and Belfast has also been, 29 policemen sent to the hospital in Belfast. People protesting over the Union Jack and loyalty to the Crown. That's not, you know. People in Ireland have had enough, and I've been hoping the mix would get up off their arses and really start making statements, people should all over the world, and Irish women, boy, they can throw a tantrum and get your attention if you've been there. But nonetheless, it is time for this to rise up. Now, picture riots and civil unrest like this happening in 2009 in the middle of severe climate change, in the middle of severe energy shortages and blackouts, in the middle of... Now is when the meme is really being, I think, starting to become visible for being the enemy to all of mankind that it is. We have a caller, Matt from Weaverville, North Carolina. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Mike.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, man.
I'm over here on the East Coast, where we've been 30 degrees above average temperature for this time of year.
Yeah.
And even the people around me are like, oh, this is great. You know, it's like people eat food, but they have no idea what's involved in growing it. And you know, we live out in the country. We grow a lot of our own food. And, you know, the weather does this. We're looking around and we're thinking to ourselves, gosh, you know, what's this going to do to the fruit trees? What's this going to do to the insect population this summer? It's unsettling.
Indeed, it is. And when one, again, takes the position of being a part of Mother Earth instead of being separated from her, it follows as surely as night follows day. And there's been a tremendous amount of volcanism around the world, volcanoes going off. That she's in a serious process of changing her clothes here. That some massive changes are underway. So what is 30 degrees above normal in North Carolina now, about 60?
Yeah, well, warmer than that even. And the thing is, it's the nighttime temperature that's the big one. The average temperature this time of year at night is 26 degrees Fahrenheit. And, it was like 55 degrees Fahrenheit last night.
Wow.
And it's pretty close tonight. And I've got, bulb plants that are sprouting up, like lilies and tulips and what have you. They may be in for shock here in 2 or 3 weeks if we get a blizzard or something.
Well, the conventional thinking is so bovine among the masses that that are still hypnotized, who are still acting as their own prison guards to protect the system, because they assume, it'll just stay this way and we'll start to grow oranges here. But the lesson, especially over the last 3 or 4 years, is that none of these changes are permanent. They're just a reflection of complete instability.
Yeah, well, and the instability is reflected in the larger society. The image that came to me this evening as I was listening to you talk about the dying meme is a drowning man. A drowning man can be extremely powerful and dangerous.
Yeah.
But he's nonetheless drowning, and he's panicking, and he doesn't care who he takes down with him, really, because he's not thinking. And it just, when you look at like the tar sands and fracking and austerity programs and just the violence against Mother Earth, it seems like this sort of desperate clawing to stay at the surface as this whole thing goes down.
And the way I see it clearly, it's the theme that I've been trying to develop seriously on the show over the last year. We have a choice. We have a choice to live from fear or love. We have a choice on what we focus on. One of the great spiritual lines I've heard is, keep your face toward the sun, you will see fewer shadows. So that's why it's important to see Idol No More and the rising consciousness. And it was so good to hear you speak with such eloquence about your awareness of the web of life and connectedness with the planet. But that was really a good image that you used. I want to thank you for that, Matt, because that really does kind of describe it. It's a drowning man standing on the first pile of bodies he wants to build is that of women and children. That's not the way we want to live.
Thank you, Mike. And I just want to thank you for everything you've done. I'm as agnostic as they come about everything, but listening to you these past few months has helped me to open myself to another dimensional way of thinking about what's happening. And it's been really helpful to me, so thank you very much.
You have no idea how grateful I am to hear that, Matt. Thank you very much. We have we have another caller. We have it says Step Keen, I don't know, Step Keen, New Hampshire. Who, I don't know what your name is, but who are you and where are you?
I'm Step, and I'm living in Keene, New Hampshire.
I got it. Okay, I didn't know if your name was Step Keen. There was commas, and thank you very much.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm very good, and it's a great pleasure to talk to you. Back in, 2002 or so, I set up mics for the 9/11 international inquiry that we had there
in
the convention center in San Francisco.
I remember that. That was a good event, yes.
Yes, and I also met you before a protest. I believe you introduced me to Cynthia McKinney I've espoused that you're a bit of my political guru for a while, and yet I just found that you have this show going on for so long.
Oh, well, welcome.
And, I think it's very zen what you've done to step down. I kind of have to limit my news intake, and you and Amy Goodman, to me, are, the heroes of America, the best patriots kind. And it's,
thank you.
It's,
that'd be a whole separate radio show. We're not going there tonight, but thank you.
And I'm I listened to your show where you spoke of it's kind of useless to look at the whole second shooter situation in Connecticut. And that was good for me because I was about to get obsessed. But I do appreciate your point of view on the China, Japan, America triangulation of fire that's going on here. And I look at the big picture sometimes and think, oh, well, America's got to defend Japan because they were told not to have an army after World War II. And
they do have
and
a
yet
defense
we engaged force. In a war of death monsters, and they beat us for a while with the Toyotas and the Hondas and stuff. And, you know, to me, I'm getting to think, well, everything is a conspiracy, so... But GE didn't own the Fukushima plant. That's the the hitch in my theory. You know what I mean? But I get the sensation that we're not, America's not going to be all that helpful in the Japan situation. America seems to love profit off of investing in both sides of the wars.
No. Let me just jump in there very clearly. Especially over the last 2 years, the United States government has renewed and reemphasized all of its treaty obligations to Japan. The United States maintains many military bases in Japan, listening posts on China, intelligence operations. The United States and Japan are boy, is this a sick pun, Siamese twins. In other words, the United States has placed itself in a position so that it could have hegemonic control of the Pacific Ocean from Japan to Australia to give it that kind of clout on the high seas. And the United States and Japan cannot be separated. And any war between China and Japan, a military confrontation, automatically involves the United States as soon as the bullets start flying. There's no way around it. This is not going to be avoided. As some Army intelligence clown or some disinfo guy out there got on my Facebook page and he says, oh, no, that the big war won't happen with China and Japan. Somebody will suck somebody into something over Mali, which is a typical government distraction. This is a critical thinking test. Mali does not have any mutual defense pacts with a superpower. You know, Japan does. That's the United States. That is a direct Sino-U.S. confrontation, and nobody will win that.
Yeah. are you worried about what a big factor things like Yemen? I don't want to. We're both kind of millenniumists, and I don't want to get into where's the next conflagration going to begin.
We know where they are now. We know where the stress points are, and what the weather is telling us so clearly. That insofar as climate on this Earth, all the stress points are being reached and exceeded. That's the meme dying everywhere. With regard to the Middle East. Russia has just sent a flotilla of ships expressly stating they are there to defend Bashar al-Assad, and Russia will not accept any regime change in Syria. That is the ante is being upped there, and the stakes are being upped there as well. This is, you know, eventually all of the stretching and all of this lying, all of the momentum that has come along, that has built, is coming home to roost. And the rubber bands have got to break, and that's why I'm saying that I'm paying attention to some of these stories tonight, because the rubber bands are breaking. Anyway, Steph, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate that.
Well, let's keep hoping that the drones stop and that the United States wakes up out of its destructive bend.
Well, let's hope the world wakes up, man. Thank you. As I look at this again, you know, I don't want the United States to... The United States can only be the United States. It's like the parable of the scorpion and the turtle. Maybe that'll bear repeating here. There's a scorpion sitting on a riverbank in a hot, sunny place in Texas, and he wanted to get across the river, but he couldn't swim. So a turtle comes by, and the scorpion says, "Hey, man, carry me across the river, please." And the turtle says, "You're nuts, man. You're a scorpion. You're poisonous. You'll kill me. I'll die." And the scorpion says, "No, man. If I sting you, I'll die too. Then we'll both be dead." So the turtle thinks about it, says, "Okay, hop on." And they swim across. And sure as can be, in the middle of the river, the scorpion stings the turtle right in the neck, and they're both going to die. And the turtle looks up at the scorpion and says, "Hey, man, why'd you do that? Now we're both going to die." And the scorpion says, "I couldn't help it. I'm a scorpion." Joshua from Torrington, Connecticut. You there?
I just had this kind of this brain fart, and I want to throw it at you and see what you think.
Okay. You're thinking
about this possible conflict with China, you know, if China and Japan should start a fight. And then I started thinking, I was like, well, you know what? They have such a huge standing army. The only way that we could possibly, you know, do such a thing would just be to try to encourage a gigantic militia. And could it possibly be some backhanded way that stirring up the whole gun control debate would be a great way for Americans to basically fund creating the world's largest standing army in an instant?
No, that's a reach. And here's why. Because, first of all, China has no intention, no desire to invade the United States with its army. It doesn't. It already owns us anyway with debt. There is no desire to. What are 200 million or, you know, 100 million Chinese troops going to do here or get here? We're collapsing too. We passed peak oil in 1970. We don't have vast amounts of natural resources to occupy and take. We pretty much raped this country. We're fracking it to pieces now. And there's not much here. See, that's where infinite growth fails, because in all major wars up until this point, there was something called the spoils of war. After World War II, there were enormous spoils after World War II, and that was what it was about. There's no spoils to be won anymore. The planet's exhausted. And besides that, 300 million Americans with guns. Well, there are 300 million firearms in the country now for 310 million people. That does not a standing army make, and it doesn't a disciplined militia make, and nobody's going to train that. There's no money for that. So, no, there is no connection there. I can guarantee it, Josh.
All right. Well, it was a brain fart, like I said.
That's okay. It was an okay discussion, man. You know, so this is how we think critically through this stuff. And this is how we begin to see things. And for me, it is so apparent that the weather anomalies are really metaphorical for stuff that's happening all over the world. I mean, there was another new gang rape and murder on a bus that's driving through streets in India this last week. And it's not just India, but things are getting that screwy. The springs are coming out, and nobody's going to get organized out of this. Things break down, not up.
And I'm pretty confident that I emotionally and mentally I can kind of deal with a lot, but the idea of having to deal with my own country in the middle of a civil war while dealing with collapse on top of environmental destruction, on top of, you know, economic destruction. It's a lot to handle.
Well, okay, if you're not involved in the transition movement, by all means get so, you know, start building community that's organized around a different set of priorities, because if you start worrying about that, you wind up in a vibration of fear. And that's what's dying. And it is so important to focus and to support and give your energy to those things that you find that are healthy. What you feed grows. Josh, thanks for calling. I'm going to play another song here before I wrap up for the night. And I want to thank everybody who called in tonight. It's a very interesting week. And I'm going to be 62 years old on February the 3rd. That's Sunday. I'll be doing a show with you guys, and I'm going to go file for Social Security the minute that I can, because it may only be $200 and some a month. I don't care. If I can get some, at least I say I got a little bit. We're riding that here. But as I listened to all this tonight now, and as I put this show together, being so aware that the meme was dying, and as the meme dies, we're going to see more and more aberrant behavior, examples of, it is so important that we go to find the examples of light being shown in the dark places. And that's what I'm going to be looking for all next week. But we have a choice to heal now. We cannot heal Mother Earth. We cannot heal the planet because we are made from her. We are her. There's not a molecule anywhere on us, in us, or part of us that did not come from this planet. And so if she is to be healed, then we must be healed. And I am aware personally on my own, out of my own experience, but also on a great many other levels, that there are hearts awakening and there are a great many healings taking place where fear and hurt and wound and resentment are being replaced. And I set up with Tammy Gosnell for the break because, 10 months ago, I was going to go sing at Paul Fest with her, and I was going to cover an amazing song by one of my favorite songwriters in the whole world, Mark Cohn. And I'm going to sing this now, or I'm going to sing this, I'm going to play this. I cover the crap out of this song. I love this song. But Mark Cohn wrote it. He's going to sing it tonight. Because healing is what we all need, and I can hear a man's voice. A sane, spiritual man's voice, a balanced man, a man of the new sun's voice, singing this, and in his heart holding all of the women and the children who are taking it so hard on the chin right now. So let's hear Healing Hands by Mark Cohn.
Tonight I cried the tears of a child who knows what fear runs deep and wild inside. But the river's in flood tonight. I lay down and the light streamed across my face. Felt the beauty of some deeper grace, and I tried to find my way to the other side. Now I feel your skin as smooth as silk, drunk like a baby on his mama's milk. Take me down under tree, lay your healing.